You're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode 196. In this episode, I got to hang out with Irene McKenna to chat about discipline, punishment, and boundaries. Oof, these are three big ones that a lot of us are trying to do a little differently than we experienced growing up. And knowing what that looks like and being able to implement in the moment can be so tough. This episode is full of tangible tips and tricks for you to implement with your tiny humans, starting right away. Head on over to Instagram and tag seed.and.so to share your biggest takeaway with me. I want to hear what really hit home for you and what was helpful, and also would like to hear what you'd like to dive deeper into. Your feedback is so helpful for us to create more free content with you in mind. All right, folks, let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Hey everyone, welcome to Voices of Your Village. I received a text recently from a pal of mine, Jenna, from the body exploration episode. And she was like, I just heard this talk from this amazing woman. You need to have her on the podcast. And the more I dove into her website and her content, I agreed. And so I reached out and she so graciously is joining us today. Irene is here from Irene McKenna Coaching as a parent coach. Hey, Irene, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. It's a rainy day here in Vermont.
It's here too in upstate New York.
Nice. It's a nice day to be inside in my cozies.
Yes.
Exactly. Great. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you wound up here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my background is actually in physical therapy. I've been a physical therapist almost 20 years, but and I've had the blessing of working per diem for the past like eight when my kids were little, but when it came time to them to go back to school full time, I just felt both a calling to do something different as well as at the time I was really stuck in my own muck. I had two kids and 15 months apart, and it was just, I was not getting myself back in a very happy way, let's say. And that journey of kind of finding myself first led me to health coaching. I became a certified health coach. And as I dove into coaching, I kind of started peeling back my own layers, which was amazing. But then in working with, being called to work with moms and through like their health and self-care, I just felt like something was missing. And I just had a conversation one day with somebody who said, I'm a parenting coach. And it was kind of like this aha, like that exists. I was the parent. I was not a peaceful parent. I didn't spank and things, but I did use timeouts and punishments and consequences. There was a lot of tears. There was a lot of yelling. I kind of felt like parenting was something I was surviving. Like each age and stage was a challenge. I had to overcome that age, that stage, only to face a new challenge. It's kind of like the evidence that I was failing was all around me, right? The dishes were in the sink, the clothes were, you know, in the dirty clothes. It was all this pressure to be something, and it was just weighing me down. But I didn't think there was anything different. And so when I found parenting coaching, I actually was like, oh, this could be great for my clients. And I kind of used my intuition, found a program that really spoke to me where I was in the coaching realm, working on mindfulness and who you are as a parent. And the way it works is you dive into the program itself. And from like week one or two diving in, I was like mind blown, like, holy cow, this is a whole new way of being as a parent. And it completely changed my perspective on parenting and how we parent. And in that, it rather than it kind of benefiting my health coaching practice, it became everything about me. Like my passion is changing how we see parenting, how we think of parenting, how we are thriving as parents, and how we are supporting our kids to thrive.
I absolutely love that. Yeah, I saw a line on your website that just like spoke to my heart. It said, I felt like I was failing most days, but isn't that parenting? And I think so many folks are in that, right? The everyday grind of surviving when they could be thriving, but they don't know how to get there. So let's bring them there, sister.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So when people come to you as like a parent coach, what's the why behind this? Like, what's the goal?
So the goal is, a lot of times, right, they think they have to fix behavior, right? They think they have to change their child. Their child's not listening. They're not cooperating. They're kind of beating their head against the wall, trying to get these behaviors. I connect with parents either through, you know, like Facebook, or I do the talk that Jenna had contacted you after, where it's like opening eyes to a different way of seeing things. And so then they come to me, if they come to me from that place, it's kind of like, I didn't know there was anything different. There's still this idea that we need to control, fix, and manage our child's behaviors. Like, we are creating this little person. We have to create this well-behaved, happy, successful child. And it's that pressure to create. So it's kind of the idea that they need to change behavior is kind of the why, but it's deeper than that is the idea that they're failing in some way. They are not being the parent that they want to be, whether it's because their kids aren't listening or because they're yelling all the time. There's just, it's not connecting, and they want different.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I similarly run like parent support groups, and most people come to me with this, it's a behavior change we're looking for in our kids. Mm-hmm. And before we know it, we dive into how to change behavior in our kids, because if we don't change our response to them, they won't change their response to us.
Exactly.
All right. So what was, when you were diving into this personally, and then now working with folks, what was the biggest game changer for you in parenting? Like, what has really shifted the way that you approach kind of life in general with your tiny humans now?
The biggest change for me was not taking their behavior personally. They're not trying to get me. They're not trying to get away with something. They're not behaving in this way because they care at all about my experience. This is their experience. They're struggling with something. They need support. So the game changer was really how I saw them. And I helped them, you know, through it. I can even think, you know, 2 years ago, my son, you know, throughout the, you know, I hate you, you're the worst parent, I wish you weren't my mom, something he was angry about. And immediately it became, how dare you talk to me like that? Like, that hurts mommy's feelings. We don't talk to people like that. Versus when it happened a few weeks ago with my son, I was able to just sit there with him, knowing it had nothing to do with me, and just say, you know, I can tell you want mommy to know how angry you are with me right now, how angry you are. And helping him process his emotions because I wasn't clouded with my own.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so huge. That's so, so huge. We often have a root emotion, and we might on the surface be like, oh my gosh, that hurt my feelings. And underneath that, we're like feeling, I think oftentimes, this guilt or shame or fear or disappointment of like, am I a terrible parent? Am I doing this wrong? And they just hit like a sore spot in me, and now I'm triggered.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing to be able to kind of work through that and see it.
Because while as parents, in any moment, our feelings are completely valid. Like, we have these feelings. They usually have nothing to do with our child's behavior. They are from us, from our childhood, from our hurts, because no matter how wonderful our childhood may have been, we were a child viewing the world from this limited lens, making generalizations and interpretations based on that. So we carry with us these ideas or these hurts that then are projected onto our child.
Yes, sister, preach. And even in adulthood, right? Like, we enter, there are so many things that we're going to take in every single day. And I call them root emotions or heart emotions. It's like the emotion that is living on your heart. And it's usually not the one that we see. We might see sadness or see anger on the surface, but there's a heart emotion underneath all of that. Well, and same for our tiny humans.
Absolutely.
When they're mad at you and they're saying, I hate you, he's mad at you, but really he's feeling something else underneath it all.
He was feeling disappointed and sad that his brother got to go spend the afternoon with grandma by herself, and I'm not loved as much as my brother, and this isn't fair. And as soon as I gave him that space to feel angry without being judged, and I said to him, because he was saying, you know, go away. And I said, you want mommy to go away because if you look in my eyes and you see how much I love you, it will be hard to stay angry because anger is a defense. Mm-hmm. And he did. He opened the door like a minute later and threw himself into my arms sobbing about this isn't fair. Why is this? And being able to feel that sadness mm-hmm. that then washed over him and then washed away because he was safe to feel it. And then he's like, okay, let's go play a game.
Oh, what a beautiful, the hard part there that I have had to really work on is once they're done with it, that, and I'm not done, I'm like, well, you just threw this whole thing and now you're like, let's go play a game as if that didn't all happen.
I haven't processed this yet. Let's, yeah, exactly. Let's stay here for another minute or two so I can work through it.
Right. I'm not ready. Usually then I'll be like, yeah, I'd love to play a game. I'm just going to go to the bathroom real quick and then we can play.
Yeah.
Give myself that breathing space. I love this. Oh, you're speaking to my heart. Okay, so you're old you and you're on this path to becoming now new you.
Right.
What actions are required? Like, what's the how in this? How do you put this into everyday life when you're in the middle of the like dishes in the sink and the chaos in the life and the tantrums and the whatever?
Yeah. For me, the big catalyst was I had a coach myself, a parenting coach, and I stood in knee deep in that muck. And I remember, saying to my coach, you know, in the middle of it, you know, I got myself into this, I don't know if people are wearing earmuffs if kids are listening, but SHIT show, how do I get myself out of it? Like I have to fix this. And it was somebody who stood with me through all that, because I, you read books, right? Change feels hard. It feels scary. It feels uncomfortable. It feels messy. And it is, it's kind of like you have an old coat and it's full of holes in it and you know, it's not keeping you warm. So you go out to get a new coat and you try on a new coat. It's a little scratchy. It's a little tight. It doesn't feel quite right. You want nothing more than to put that old coat back on, even though it's not doing you any good. But then maybe it takes somebody else to tell you, you know, that coat's probably not keeping you warm because we don't see our own things. So yeah. For me, that was the big game changer. But even as I continued beyond that time, it's a muscle, right? It's a muscle. Change is a muscle. And working it in the beginning, it's conscious effort and it's being mindful and it's kind of being able to rework those thoughts. And I've done, so when I say, I mean, I've done a lot of work on myself to build this awareness. And I still, you know, find moments where it's like, I'm descending and now I, you know, I need to breathe, you know, breathe in. That was the big game changer for me, is having that support and accountability to get through the really hard stuff, of creating change. Because it feels that way, it's very easy for us to shy, you know, to go back to the old way, even if we don't like the old way, because it's comfortable, it's familiar. And when we don't have somebody calling us out on that, we fall into our default patterns. We fill our schedule so full that we don't possibly have time to work on the program or read the book. We go to bed late because I have to clean the whole house. So I wake up the next day. So change, I'm too exhausted to change. We check out on social media or other things because we all have these default patterns. And without having somebody, now it could be two friends going through a program together that you are, you know, constantly are connecting with to keep you on track. It's the same with, you know, hiring a trainer at the gym or having a personal trainer or doing a program with a group of people, because there's that constant check-in that I'm not, you know, it's the tough love when you fall off track, but it's also the cheerleading and celebration when things are good. It's having both of those.
I absolutely love that. I think that we often underestimate the power of accountability, mm-hmm. and it plays such a huge role. I started off just doing these Tiny Humans Big Emotions groups. It would be like a one-time, two-hour group. And I found that after every group, I was having people come and say, like, what can we do now? Like, how do we keep meeting with you? How do we keep doing this? So I started a series, and now it is almost everybody who joined my series has already taken a group, and they mm-hmm. came and they were like, ooh, now hold me accountable. Now let's meet and come back. And I think that wherever you find that, I mean, Rachel Hollis is doing this like in last 90 days yes. challenge, and there's yes. the accountability there. Like wherever mm-hmm. you can find folks who are going to hold you accountable and you're going to meet up. Not everyone can afford to pay for coaching, and sure. I hear Absolutely. That and my groups and all that. Mm-hmm. But find folks who are in this with you and right. are going to challenge you to go through this journey together in a yeah. place of growth and not just a wallowing in the trenches.
Right. Absolutely. It's the idea of having that group of people that support you, but having the people that stretch you mm-hmm. and the people that stretch you and call you out on those behaviors, who know what your default patterns are and can say, I see you doing this, you know, let's climb mm-hmm. out, that are going to stand with you in that. Yes.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. And I think like the bonus and the huge power to coaching or working with someone with expertise is when you don't know what else to do, there's someone there who does, right? There's an expert in the room who's walked this path and has served in this capacity and can say, aha, you're stuck in this pattern. Here's another way you can approach that.
Yes.
I absolutely love that. So I think the huge thing is that in order to change tiny human behaviors, we have to change our behavior.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's so hard. It's so much easier to be like, no, it's them that needs to change, right? Like
yes.
they need to stop throwing a tantrum, or they need to go to sleep on time, or they need to stop hitting.
Right.
And it starts with us.
It does. And it can be hard. It can be hard to admit that we're the ones that quote unquote have to change to create this transformation in our family. But it's absolutely true, because who we are being is directly affecting the response we're getting from our child. And the only way we're going to create the behaviors that we want to see, the cooperation, the listening, is if we are connected with our child, if they value our relationship with them as their top priority. That's yeah. when the behaviors change.
Absolutely. The collaboration has to start with connection, right? Like we have to connect with them first before they're going to collaborate. And likewise as adults, if somebody treated us in that manner, we would want to connect before we collaborate. It's
right.
It's a Absolutely. Very natural, but we should treat our tiny humans with that as well. So I want to dive in a little bit to the brain science, because I think oftentimes like folks are like, I am not a meditator, or I am not like X, Y, and Z, right? It doesn't feel like it's a part of our identity or a part of who sure. we are. And let me tell you, that was hand in the air. That was me. I was like, nah, meditation isn't for me. I was like a basketball player mm-hmm. and like it just felt outside of my comfort zone.
Sure.
I didn't know or understand or see the value in like even a minute of breathing, let alone 5 minutes, and mm-hmm. just how awkward and uncomfortable and all the things. So can we talk about the brain science of like the importance of finding your calm and kind of what's happening in the brain?
Sure, absolutely. So when we are reacting to our child, what's happening in our body is same as if a lion was chasing us through the jungle, right? The hormones, our neurotransmitters are flooding our body. And so our muscles tense, our breathing quickens, our pulse starts to race. We are seeing our child, we are seeing this parenting situation as an emergency, and we are seeing our child as the enemy. This is our biologic stress response. Same as, like I said, a lion is chasing us through the jungle. We are reacting to that. And when we react to that in that space, we are now entering our emotional brain. So in our emotional brain, we are not controlling our reaction. We are living on autopilot from old programming. And in this unconscious space, we are not choosing how we are, like I said, reacting to our child. So we are yelling, we are coming at them. We're not seeing them in that moment. We are seeing something that needs to be fixed and controlled. But what we also do is when we quote unquote come at our child that way, we are now sending them into their stress response, where learning is impossible. So we're trying to fix something, but we've shut down learning. So when we find our own inner peace first, we can, or restore it when it starts to kind of come up that way, we are then going into our logical brain, the place where we can be compassionate, where we can be wise, where we can choose our response to our child versus just reacting. And when I say reacting, or when we get triggered, so going a little bit further into brain science, like Bruce Lipton and things like that, is the first 7 years of a child's life, so us included, we are basically spent almost in this period of hypnosis, right? Where it's been studied, our brain waves are actually at a lower frequency. So we are just recording, observing and recording, taking it in. We are programming how to be in a family, how to be in a community, how to be in a culture. We are being programmed with what it looks like to be a parent, what it looks like to be a child in that relationship, because we don't come to parenting with a blank slate. Same as is our parents didn't come to us with a blank slate. So we are projecting onto this. The problem is 70% of the beliefs that we download are self-limiting, disempowering beliefs, sabotaging beliefs. So when we live 95% of our day in our unconscious mind, because if we're thinking about one thing, we're not thinking about how we walk, how we how many times have you driven in the car and you're like, I just can't remember 5 minutes here because I've been focusing on this. So our unconscious mind takes over. So that's what happens in our parenting when we get triggered. We go into our unconscious mind where we are then driven by whatever we believe as a parent. So a parent should always be in control is a big one. Or a child should just listen and just obey. Because as I'm sure, you know, you teach is that like our emotions, no one can create an emotion in ourselves that doesn't already exist. So for example, if we get angry or frustrated when our child refuses to clean up their toys, we have a belief on how a child should learn responsibility. A child should clean up. A child, you know, should be listening. So because we're operating from all of these shoulds, we're not actually seeing our child, what's going on for them in that moment. Because it starts with the thoughts that we have. Those thoughts create feelings. So we have a feeling around how this should be. And then that feeling creates our action. So it creates how we're coming at our child in that moment, which then creates the response that we get. So when we go back and we can change our thoughts in that situation and open up to different possibilities, we then can change our feeling around it. I had this conversation with my husband just last week because I dropped the kids off from school and I come home and he says, oh, they're really trying to get away with something or something like that. And I said, I can see how you would feel that way. But if we think that they're trying to get away with something, then what do we feel? Well, we feel we need to control because they're not going to get away with anything with me. So then our action is to clamp down on that control. And then the response that we get is them fighting, because what human, whether small or big, wants to feel controlled and demanded and commanded all the time? I said, what if instead we consider that they are struggling this morning or they're doing the best that they can? Well, then the feeling becomes, how do I support them through that? Then the action becomes one of support and guidance, and the reaction becomes a totally different experience.
Yes to all of it. I'm just sitting here like nodding my head like over and over like, yep, yep, I love this. Yep.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Are you tuning in and wishing that you had more tangible support and a blueprint for implementing all of this? Well, you're in luck. We have a Tiny Humans Big Emotions class for you. Our Tiny Humans Big Emotions class covers discipline and punishment and boundaries and how to emotion code in the moment and what it looks like to support your kiddos with sensory regulation, how to regulate their nervous system and guide them through this work. Head on over to tinyhumansbigemotions.com to sign up for the class today. You do not have to do this alone. tinyhumansbigemotions.com.
I think one thing that can be challenging is the idea of boundaries. And this is something I've run into a lot with folks is I say, like, it's not a democracy. It is a dictatorship here. Like, this is, we're not in a peer-to-peer relationship in caregiver to tiny human. And it is our job to keep them safe, to keep them healthy, and to help them grow. Right. And so how do we, I guess, like, control that and have that control over, no, you can't have pizza for dinner every night because it's my job to make sure that you're healthy. Or no, you can't stay up until midnight every night because it's my job to make sure that you're healthy. And that's a part of being healthy. So navigating those things, I think that that's where it can, we can run into like a challenge of control where we're like, well, what am I supposed to control? Because I've seen a pendulum swing to the other side of like kids calling all the shots. And my concern there is that they're looking, like, from a kid perspective, like, they're looking for someone to step in and say, I'm going to keep you safe. Yes. I'm not going to let you do that because I'm going to keep you safe.
Absolutely. It's our job, as you said, as parents, to set boundaries, to deny unreasonable requests, to keep them safe, to change behavior, because in that, kids feel safe. You know, I heard this video or story one time where you go to an amusement park, and, you know, you get on the roller coaster and the guy comes by and he checks all the bars. Well, how many of us check that bar again? Not because we expect it to give, but because we want to make sure it stays. And that's what our kids need us to do. And I heard something when you were saying, like, well, you can't stay up to midnight or you can't eat pizza. And the core of that was because it's my job to help you be healthy, to grow. And what you're doing without necessarily realizing is you're shaping those boundaries around a value. And when we shape it around a value, those values stay steady. They become our rock. How we get there can change. But here's the thing, we can set those boundaries, and what we need to let go of is that our child needs to like them, right? They don't need to like our boundaries. It's not our job to fix or make them happy all the time. They are allowed their own emotions. They are allowed their own experience. And this is where we need to get out of our own heads and work on ourselves so that we can not take that behavior personally and realize that we can hold these boundaries and then we can coach them through those emotions. I get that you really want screen time today, but this is why we don't do it. We have set this boundary, you know, and I get that you want to do this. And empathizing with them, showing that you understand where they're coming from and coaching them through that. But this is where working on ourselves comes in, because if we have a fear of conflict from our childhood, if we have a fear of not being loved from our childhood, we are going to find it very difficult to set consistent boundaries. And when boundaries aren't consistent, a child, they are wired to test, right? They are wired to go out and explore the world and test our boundaries. So when we're not holding those firm boundaries with love, but firm and consistent, they don't know where the break is. So they're going to keep pushing. And what it's doing is it's creating the very thing that you're afraid of, which is they don't love me because they're fighting back or they're creating conflict. So we don't hold those boundaries. But then when they don't have the boundaries, they don't know where they are. That's when they act out in these behaviors, because like you said, they just want to feel safe. They want to feel safe in where they are so that they can then explore the world.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And I think it is interesting to think about like our social programming in this. And one thing that I find helpful is to know, like, if I'm going to set this boundary, what's my expectation? Before I even set the boundary, what do I expect from this human? Because it's probably not that they're going to say, okay, sounds good, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to expect that you're going to see a response from them mm-hmm. that is less than favorable. When I say, all right, it's time to leave the playground after giving you letting you know in 5 minutes, in 2 minutes, when I say it's time to leave the playground, I'm not anticipating that that tiny human's going to say, okay, can't wait to get in the car. Like, my expectation is that he's probably, or she or they are probably going to express their disappointment at leaving the playground.
Right.
I'm not there to reason with you. We're not talking about whether or not we're leaving the playground.
Right.
I'm then going to say, I hear that you're disappointed. You don't want to leave the playground. Would you like to walk to the car or should I carry you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. You don't even have to fully process your emotion here. You don't have to do that. You can do that in the car, whatever. But the boundary still stands. It's not a negotiation.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Where the flexibility in how we get there might change. Same what works for bedtime. We have a bedtime of 8 o'clock because I value your health and that means you get good sleep. Do you want to shower first? Do you want to have bedtime snack first? Yeah. How you get there can change. You're giving your child some ownership over the process, but knowing that you're holding firm, there's some structure there that they can lean into, knowing what that looks like.
Yeah, that's huge. It's so huge. I love that. And I think a lot of these, you know, we don't necessarily plan for where we'll set a boundary and then we're like, oh, don't climb up on the couch. And it was like an automatic and we didn't know going into this that we were going to set it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the kid's climbing up on the couch. Yeah. And we're now we get into this like power trip of like, well, I said you can't climb up on the couch.
Right.
And this is where I think being able to get out of that amygdala brain, the feelings brain, and into the prefrontal cortex where you can have rational brain is a game changer.
Yes.
Because that pulls us out of the power struggle.
Exactly. We're not arguing. And it's and depending on their age, they may not be able to say no to that impulse to climb on the couch. Mm-hmm. And then we have a decision to make. Am I going to, and this is where we kind of as parents, we think we have to hold on to these things with a stronghold. Okay, well, if I'm sitting right next to you, is it okay to climb on the couch?
Mm-hmm.
And we get to decide where, you know, where we can create that flexibility. But yes, taking ourselves out of that flexibility, it's not us against them. They are not continuing to climb on the couch as like a dagger at us. Like they are not like, you know, I'll hear like, well, my one-year-old like looks at me, smiles and drops food on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, how's that not, but it's like, they are not able to make the distinction between knowing something's not right and actually doing something. They don't have that impulse control yet. Right. But when we are seeing it as taking it personally, we're automatically thinking when they could be saying, hey, mom, look how gravity works. I just dropped my food again.
Right.
No?
Right.
Versus seeing it as this big power struggle. And then we can decide, okay, well, if I don't want them throwing food on the floor, do I take the food, you know, do I take the food away? But when it's not a power struggle, it's how do I support them and guide them to this future behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the difference, like discipline and punishment, right? Discipline is the idea of teaching a code of behaviors, and it's focused on the future desired behavior. And discipline or punishment is making someone so unhappy based on a past behavior. Well, the key to this is discipline, teaching works on the thinking brain, the place where learning actually occurs, where punishment invokes that emotional brain in our child, where learning's impossible. So when we can remove that power struggle, we actually have a much greater chance of doing the thing we're trying to teach.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I would go as well into the, like the behavior to say that even if they have the impulse control, it is their job to see if that boundary is true.
Yes.
Right? Like that's their way of saying like, oh, is this real? Like, are you really going to keep me safe? Are you really going to keep me healthy? Are you going to do it on Tuesday? Are you going to do it when dad's traveling? Are you going to do it when we're sick? Are you going to do it when we're tired? Like, is this the rule on Saturday too? Like, that's their job. And that's got to be our expectation, or else we're just going to continuously feel like we're failing.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, I said this, why don't they just accept it? But like you said, it's, am I accepting this every day? They're looking for the holes. And if we can get out of our own head that they're doing that to kind of get back at us or punish us, but simply that this is how they're wired. This is how they learn to navigate their world that has nothing to do with our experience. But the expectation is that we simply continue to hold this. We have this boundary around screen time during the week here where we just started as a school year where we don't do screen time Monday through Friday. We have movie Friday night. So that's kind of where we have it. So my son, my seven-year-old, loves Legos, and he can look up on legobrickinstructions.com any Lego instruction and then like build it. So it was like a Tuesday, he wanted to build something. And here in my head, I'm like, oh, but it's educational. He's learning something, but I had to hold that boundary. And the thing is, because I had held it so well prior, it took him like two or three times, but I really want to do this. And me saying, I know it's going to be so great when we do it on Saturday. Because I wasn't taking it personally, I was able to step out of that and simply hold that space that it's okay if you're not happy with it, but this is what we're going to do. I can help you build something else. And then he was okay with it. It was kind of like, oh, okay, I tested, I bumped against it, and it's still there. Like, okay, it's there.
Right. And this is where, like, kiddos have learned with certain, I have a lot of parents who will say like, okay, well, my parents also co-parent with us or are part of our village, or what if this isn't the expectation with this person or this parent or whatever? They will learn what the expectation is with different folks. And I think like you don't have to worry about what other people's expectations are going to be because they'll learn what to expect from you.
Yes, exactly.
It's huge. Okay, so now I got a lot of, so I put this question out, always throw it out to my village when we're going to be doing a podcast episode. And I got a lot of like, well, it would be nice to be able to do that. It would be nice to have a partner who works from home, or it would be nice to work part-time and have the like time to put this energy in, or there were a lot of like reasons why I couldn't do it, but other people can.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah. We all have these stories because our brain, our primitive brain, its whole purpose is to keep us safe. And so we have these stories about why it's not possible. And maybe it's because if I don't do it, then I can't fail at it. Or if I don't do it and things don't work out, then I don't have to deal with that judgment. So we create these barriers to it being possible for us because of these stories that are inside of us. Part of that programming, that same thing that comes out with our kids, comes out in every area of our life. But creating space to make change is all about energy, right? When we have enough energy behind something, we open up the space to do it. And when things get where they are, get to the point where we really know when we need to make a change. And it's all about creating that space. And then it's considering, if I free myself up from all of the energy that feeling like I'm failing all the time takes for me, or power struggles with my kids, or fighting with my kids, or yelling at my kids, or clashing with my partner, if I can take all that energy and redirect it, what becomes possible? So it is very easy to sit in that space and see where it's possible for anyone else and why it's not possible for us, because the familiar feels comfortable and I don't have to risk not doing it right or not doing it well or putting myself out there. I don't have to risk being vulnerable in that way if I stay where I am and I continue to blame my circumstances for the position that I'm in.
Yeah, I absolutely love that.
We all do it in many, many areas of our life.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, from like eating to working out to whatever, I've done it a million times in so many different things. And I think it just starts with that self-awareness of like, ooh, I'm doing that again.
Right.
And just even noticing, even if you don't change it yet, just noticing those trends in that like headspace.
Right. Almost. I find the most powerful question you can ask yourself is why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, well, it's not possible for me because, well, why? Why is that not possible for you? And really, and then asking yourself why, like five more times. So getting to layer one, getting to layer two, and then just keep going deeper until you're like, oh, mm-hmm. that's building that awareness.
Yeah, that's so huge. I absolutely love that. I think it's often annoying for people because they'll bring something to my plate and I'm like, oh, why? And then we go through it and I'm like, I wonder why that is. And then they'll just keep going and they're like, will you give me an answer? I'm like, we're getting there, sister. We are getting there.
Yes, absolutely.
I love that. Another one that I heard is this, another theme that I kind of picked up from my village was this idea that, well, my tiny human is me, and I'm seeing me in this strong-willed, quick to react, I'm going to call it actually, tiny human, and almost this acceptance of like, that's my personality, and so now that's their personality.
Of course it is, because they're modeling you. Right. They're picking up, they're absorbing your energy, they're absorbing your programs. So the question becomes, do you want them to struggle with the same things you are struggling with as an adult? Because you have the power as the parent to change that. And you're right. If you don't, they will grow up and quite likely they will be quote unquote fine. I hear, you know, that a lot. I turned out fine. And maybe despite how you were parented, you did turn out fine. But what I challenge people is what does fine look like? Because as adults, we usually say we're fine, but we lose it over the smallest thing. We're diving into the wine and the chocolate. We're not handling things the way maybe we want to. And we could say, well, this is just who I am. This is our personality. And like layers of an onion, right? Those are the layers that you've put on yourself. Mm-hmm. And they're the same layers that your child is learning to put on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have heard this a lot in the topic of anxiety and depression that like, almost an acceptance. I think it's awesome, this awareness of anxiety and depression, but almost an acceptance of like, oh, I have anxiety. And then how this is generational, right? Like we now have a higher rate of anxiety than ever before. And so I'm over here asking all the whys. And I genuinely think that like, this is a trend we've got to buck, right? Like, and it starts with us as parents to say, why am I feeling anxious here? Mm-hmm. Anxiety is getting stuck in the feeling of fear, right? You're having fear about something and you're stuck in it. You can't see past it. You can't see past it. You can't cope through it. You're stuck in it. Mm-hmm. So do we accept that I'm just an anxious person and I have things that now I feel anxious about? Or do we work on that programming? I mean, like, so for me personally, I've shared a bunch about this on the podcast and in Instagram and all that jazz, but I'm a rape survivor and there were things that well into my mid-20s and whatever this happened as a child, into my mid-20s, I was still working with this fear. And I labeled it as fear and not anxiety, but for me, that's what it was. I would get anxious when I was triggered by something that my programming had said, you're not safe in this scenario because once upon a time you weren't safe. Mm-hmm. But so that evening I was wearing button down jeans, right? Instead of a zipper fly. So for over a decade, I couldn't wear button down jeans, or I chose not to wear button down jeans because I was triggered by it. But that isn't why I was raped, right? It had nothing to do with the button down jeans, but that was a part of my programming. And so I went into a therapist's office and was like, listen, I'm done living with fear and I want to learn how to not live with fear. So let's do this. And we went through all the whys and we got down to like, what was triggering the anxiety and how do I rewrite that story in my brain? Mm-hmm. How do I get to a point where I'm not putting on a pair of jeans and feeling triggered no matter what the fly is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's work and it's hard, but that is an area that I see a lot of folks saying like, well, I just have anxiety. Or I'm an anxious parent. And it doesn't have to be that way.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. And each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
It comes from somewhere, exactly.
And it's something you can rewrite. I think right. We are often saying like, oh yeah, I have anxiety because of X, Y, and Z. And we might even know our triggers, which is awesome. But right. What are we doing to change that?
Right. Absolutely.
It's so powerful to just like know. For me, it was powerful to have a therapist who said like, yeah, we can change this narrative. You got to do the work, right. But we can change this narrative. You don't have to live like this.
Yes. Thank you for sharing. That's a very powerful story.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's huge to hear. And I'm starting to like just see this trend of people talking about anxiety and depression more. And I think that is awesome. Mm-hmm. What are we doing about it? Because if we aren't doing anything, our kids are going to be talking about it too.
Right. Absolutely.
Whew, that one gave me the chills. I'm having feelings. Okay, so when you are working with your clients, like what is the most common theme that you're seeing where people are getting stuck or having like a hard challenge?
Probably perfectionism, right? The fear of failure, the fear of failing as a parent, the fear of not, you know, raising this child to be the the best that they're capable of being, to give them every opportunity. It's this, you know, this cloak of supermom. That comes through whether you're a working mom, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether you have one child, whether you have four. I think it's this idea of having to do it right, having to do it well, having to do it all.
I absolutely love that. The like finding the perfect imperfections, right? That if we're going for perfect, we're going to leave every day feeling like a failure.
Absolutely. We have this ideal, you know, ideal expectation of who we need to be or who our child needs to be. And a lot of that comes from two things. It comes from our programming of this expectation of what a parent needs to do or what a child needs to do. And then it comes from what society tells us is the quote unquote good behavior of a child. You know, the child who sits, who listens, who's cooperative, who doesn't make waves, who makes our life easy. And then when we have a child who goes against that agenda, we are made to think we're not doing our job as a parent. Mm-hmm. To create these behaviors in our child, which prevents us from seeing our child where they are and who they really are. And it robs us that joy of really loving and connecting and parenting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also kind of setting the expectation for ourselves that we're not going to respond 100% of the time the way that we hope to respond. And that's okay. Like we get to come back and say, I'm really sorry that I yelled. I was feeling frustrated and I should have taken space to feel calm. Let's talk about it again, right? Like you get to go back.
You can ask for a do-over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Actually, my sister-in-law shared a story with me recently in a way that she had felt like she had failed in the moment. Mm. And actually listening to her anecdote, she had reacted to something and one of her twins had then started crying and had like a hard emotion about this. And he felt guilty for her feelings. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even about him. It was about the other twin. And so she felt guilty for him feeling guilty. It was this whole circle of feelings. And I was like, okay, so what happened next? And she responded in a beautiful way to him. And what he got to learn is that he also doesn't have to be perfect and it's okay to make these mistakes and how you respond afterward is so important.
Yes.
Almost more important than the initial response sometimes.
Yeah. I had this happen this past weekend. My boys are, so they're 6 and 7 and they're 15 months apart and they my one son was struggling with something all day Sunday, and it led to some big behaviors. And the biggest way it was playing out was him taking it out on his brother. Mm-hmm. And at one particular moment, they were fighting like more than I'd seen him before. And I got scared that they were going to hurt each other. I couldn't, they're getting strong. I couldn't really separate them. So they were playing with forts, and my one son had this like lean to fort. I took it and I threw the fort across the room, and I yelled because I couldn't break them up. And he stormed upstairs crying because I, you know, I took it out on his fort. It's not fair. And I went to both children individually. And I said, I'm really sorry. That's how I reacted. I got scared. I should have, you know, breathed and talked you through it and helped you. I got scared you were going to hurt each other. And this is what I did. And it wasn't right. I would have liked to have handled it this way. And this is how, you know, we're going to move forward. And it gave us that chance to both talk about what had happened and to give myself grace in that moment that I was having big feelings, because even as we help our little humans process their emotions, we also need to acknowledge and process our own. And in that moment, I was feeling like I had failed. I was feeling like I did not react the way I wanted to. And I was processing these feelings of, you know, I grew up, my role in the family was to be the peacemaker, right? And mm-hmm. So fighting and conflict gets to me. And I've worked really hard through that of not knowing exactly how to do it. It's not about the how I need to separate my boys in the moment. I just need to connect with them in that moment. But giving myself grace to acknowledge those feelings, to then be able to breathe through it, to then go be able to respond to my child. Because if we respond where we haven't processed our own feelings, we're going to project those onto a child. I would have blamed them. Well, I threw the fort because you guys were fighting. Mm-hmm. I threw the fort. It's your fault. I got angry and, mm-hmm. and did that. But by sharing with them that I got scared, and so I reacted with anger out of that fear that you guys were really going to hurt each other. And sharing that with them and processing my emotions helps model to them processing their own.
I absolutely love that. I think it's huge, and it gives them the space to do this. And I think we can model it not just with our tiny humans and in conflict with them, but with our partner, with anybody, right? The person who cuts us off in traffic and we react, and then we get to say out loud, even when we're narrating to ourselves, like what we wish we would have done or whatever. Yeah. I think that it's huge. Hey, sister, I'm so glad you're doing this work. I absolutely love what you're bringing to the table. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation today. Absolutely. Where can people connect with you?
So my website is IreneMcKennaCoaching.com. That's IreneMcKennaCoaching.com. I do offer 1 hour complimentary, I call them possibility calls. So if you're thinking you want to create change, you want to see where to start, let's just have a conversation to see if what I offer can help you get there. I also am on Facebook, Irene McKenna Coaching, and I have a private Facebook community called the Mom's Hive. It's for moms who want to be more, not do more. And it's about celebrating the mom you are today while giving you support and inspiration to become the peaceful parent that you want to be. So any of those places.
Awesome. Well, we will link to all of them in the blog post as well. And I'm super, super jazzed that you're doing this work and that we got to have our paths crossed. Thank you so much, Irene.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof.
Bye.
See ya.
What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unstick it.